Hi, everybody. Good to see everyone. It was good to see some of you yesterday on the Q&A call. Get started. Okay, so before we jump in, one housekeeping piece that I wanted to mention. Next week, we have two classes, not one. Yay! Next Tuesday, we have our regular training call. And then let me just make sure I'm saying the right date here. Next Wednesday from 11 a.m. Eastern to 2 p.m. Eastern, we have a special 3-hour workshop. And I call the workshop a workshop for new and tentative practitioners. I need a better name for that workshop. Maybe after some of you come to it, you can tell me what you think a better name is. But I wanted to just mention it today for a couple of reasons. Number one, to just remind you that it's there and to remind you to put it on your calendar if you want to attend. The workshop, how do I describe the workshop? I don't do, it's not like a training call. You will get training. I will teach some things on that call, but it is much more of a workshop style. We are going to go through some processes and experiences together. The workshop is there not only for new practitioners. So, if you are a new practitioner, for sure, if you can make it live to that workshop, please come. And, Randa, this is the workshop that we have next week for new and tentative practitioners. It's a special 3-hour workshop that we have. So, it for sure is for you if you are a new practitioner. But it is also for you if you are a seasoned practitioner, but one who is feeling tentative because maybe some of the things that we're learning here in Sacred Depths that you want to integrate into your practice are different than what you've been doing before. Maybe you haven't integrated somatic pieces before. Maybe you've been doing more consulting and not as much coaching. Maybe you haven't been going deep, etc., etc. And if you feel some of the like, oh, is it going to be good enough? You know, any of the not good enough around it, any tentativeness around it, any like, what are people going to think? That the workshop is for you as well, even if you've been practicing for years. So if it's not already on your calendar, please put it on your calendar. It's a wonderful, wonderful session. There's a lot of sharing and a lot of experiential work in it. For today, we are jumping into and starting our breakthrough questioning module. And our breakthrough questioning module, similar to the two modules we've done before it. Well, let me pause and answer Nell's question. Yeah, the workshop is going to be recorded now, just like all of our other calls. So it'll be there in your member center because it's experiential. If you can be there live, even better. Not that all our training calls aren't experiential too, and all of that, but it's even more so. Okay, so we're moving into breakthrough questioning. We've got three classes, 3 sessions in our breakthrough questioning module. But the truth is that really the rest of the program, we're going to continue no matter what we look at. We're going to keep on coming back to questioning techniques and skills. So it's like we've got, it's kind of like energetics and it's kind of like listening and it's kind of like creating awareness. We have a separate module for it, but really we're working on this the entire time we're together and getting new and deeper skills the entire time we're together for Sacred Depths. For today's session, we're going to look at foundational principles and elements of powerful breakthrough questions. I'm going to get the foundational principles down for breakthrough questions. In our session next week, we're going to look at lots of different types of questions that you can be asking, why and when you would want to ask these particular questions. We'll look at different times, types of questions. And we'll also look at different question sequences. Next week's class in particular is kind of like a high content class. And then we'll have a breakthrough questioning practicum. So, as a reminder, the curriculum is here to meet you where you're at. If you're a seasoned practitioner, you're here to go deeper. You're here to improve. You already have great questioning skills and you're here to go deeper. So, if you're seasoned, I want to invite you to really pay attention. Find the places that we explore that are really on your edge so that you can go deeper, so that you can stretch your questioning skills. Don't just lean back on what you already know about questioning and questioning skills. Stretch, find the new places. The transformation and the kind of going deeper and getting more effective is in the details for you. If you're seasoned, if you are a newer practitioner, don't let the curriculum meet you where you're at. You don't need to master every single one of the details. I'll be sharing a lot of flourishes, a lot of details. For you, take it step by step, get the big pieces down, practice them. And then come back and get the details. Mastery always unfolds over time and with practice. Okay, so all that being said, let's start here. It's pretty basic, but feels important to share it. Why are questioning skills so important to effective coaching? Why do we need questioning skills when we coach, when we work with other human beings on transformation? Well, really, because at the heart of masterful coaching or co-creation of transformation, questioning is at the heart of that. You really can't have one without the other. The most effective questions have the ability to do the following. Number one, create awareness. Number two, masterful questions, effective questions have the ability to access the client's intuition. They support your client in accessing their intuition. Questions promote creativity. They promote brainstorming. They promote problem solving. Really good questions empower your clients to take responsibility for themselves and their situations. They empower clients to take responsibility for themselves and their situations. Effective questions create integrity and commitment towards goals, inner and outer. Effective questions can help a client articulate and understand their judgment. Effective questions can help create connection to self and activate learning as well. One guiding principle that's at the heart, I would say, of any coaching relationship or any coaching session is this: humans are curious. Humans by nature are curious beings. Curiosity leads to learning. Questions provide the environment for curiosity to be activated. I know this is so simple, right? So simple. It's so obvious, but it's such an important principle both for the practitioner and the client. We are curious beings. Curiosity leads to learning. Questions create an environment of curiosity, promote an environment of curiosity, validate the inclination to curiosity. Now, that being said, some of you have heard me share this before. In today's coaching industry, way too many practitioners consult when what's needed and required in the moment is asking a really good question. Not that there's anything at all wrong with consulting, and for a lot of us, myself included, consulting is an important part of the service that we provide. We have expertise and wisdom and experience and knowledge, and our clients want that from us, right? As we looked at consulting, facting is one way of creating awareness. But that being said, a mistake that some practitioners make is that they default to consulting more than is actually helpful or supportive for their client. And then in doing so, they miss out on opportunities to ask questions that will actually create way more positive energy, way more motivation, way more excitement, and way better ideas than if we were to just simply share our expertise. In situations that require questions, when we default to consulting, our clients miss out on the opportunity to answer a question for themselves. So, of course, learning happens when we consult, but there are many more moments where learning is more optimal when it comes through self-discovery, self-inquiry, self-proclamation, and answering questions for oneself. So, again, this is pretty simple and pretty obvious. So then it begs the question, why do practitioners end up consulting in moments when questions would be way more effective? And there are a couple of reasons why this can end up happening. I've certainly found myself in probably all of these before, but let me give you some of the reasons. So, number one, sometimes we end up consulting instead of asking a question, is because we move into some discomfort or fear with the learning process. We're scared that maybe the learning is going to take too long for the client. It'll take too long for them to get to the answer. And so it's just easier, like, let me just give the answer right now. Sometimes we end up consulting instead of asking a good question because of our own need to sound smart, or to impress our clients. Sometimes we end up consulting instead of questioning because of an inner compulsion to take over responsibility, right? Back to the uneven playing field. If we have a tendency to hero people, right? Want to rescue them, hero them, take that responsibility, we may fall into that trap of consulting instead of asking questions. If we don't trust that our client always knows best, we might fall into that trap. Sometimes, if you've been a practitioner for a long time, you may end up consulting when it's better to ask a question just because you've gotten too comfortable. It's just kind of one of those like you're in that pattern, you're comfortable with your own wisdom and your own expertise, and you kind of just forget. So let's think about this for a moment. Are there moments where you might be taking shortcuts and just giving clients answers instead of providing them with the learning opportunity that questions provide? And if you're not yet working with clients, are there moments, other moments in your life, in other relationships with partners, with friends, with coworkers, with children, that you might be taking shortcuts and giving answers instead of asking questions? And if so, why? Maybe it's one of the reasons that I mentioned, or maybe it's something else. And I'd love to hear a couple of voices on this. What's feeling important here for you? What are you seeing? What's coming to the surface here? Sophie's saying in the chat, I'm scared to say this, but I genuinely don't believe many of my clients know best when it comes to their marketing. I'm so glad that you're sharing this, Sophie, because this is such a great example for us to use as like a little, case study here. So, absolutely 100%, Sophie, when it comes to marketing, you know so much more than your clients do. You know how to, activate vision, you know how to make invitations, you know how to put in the language, all of that for sure. You have that expertise. In that way, you do know best. However, that being said, there are always, as just one example, there are always choices within that, right? So, for example, what are the types of clients that I'm reaching out to? You don't know best there. Your client knows best. Do I feel like I can shine if I do this, if I share this message in writing versus sharing this message in video? Marketing experts don't know that best. Our clients do. We might have to befriend some fears around that or, whatever it is. Should my rates be this or should my rates be that? That's a process of self-discovery. Sophie, let me know, and if you can just come on voice to voice, if that clicks for you.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And it would help if I could say it back to you so that it goes in, because this is it just keep I just keep bumping up against this. So yeah, there is information I know about the best way maybe to market a coaching program, blah, blah, blah. What I don't know is their best way, whether they excel when they write or when they speak. Where, exactly who their people are, their unique magic and their calling and the way that they create their results. So that's where I ask them questions, questions, questions. We gather lots of information and then I can maybe bring in the consulting and shaping what that then looks like.
100%. And also what they're ready for, right? Like all of those pieces.
So helpful. Thank you.
Good. Yeah, you're so welcome. Ayana's saying you've done that a lot. Yeah, rescue hero category. Angela's saying you were reflecting on this in the coaching partner session. Yeah, it's a lot of coaching out there is really just consulting. Yeah, Michaelyn, one of your modalities is more data heavy, and that's great, right? So long as you're conscious of bringing in the questions when the questions are needed. Angela.
Hello, Joanne. So yesterday you were talking about, because you are very good on our expertise, like Sophie was saying, and then we ended up consulting, but we don't have the practice of, like you're talking about, being heard and seeing and honoring what is. And we got to some points of going through that, and we reflect about, we'd like to know more questioning, so you're glad that you're coming today with that. Is there any other thing that you would recommend us that while you're practicing?
That's a great question. Yeah, so what I would say is when you're practicing, the most important thing is to be conscious of this and be conscious of yourself. Now, there are certain moments where facting, consulting, normalizing, that's exactly what's called for in the moment, right? But what I'd say is when you're practicing, when you're working with clients, whenever it is, be conscious of this. And if you can, before you go to consult, just ask yourself the question, is there a question right now that would actually be more helpful? Or is there something that I can reflect back, honor what is, celebrate, that would actually be more helpful and promote more learning right now? Sometimes the answer is going to be yes, and sometimes the answer is going to be no. You know, like they need this consulting piece, right? And that's great too.
That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Great question. I see there's a lot of shares in the chat, and I will absolutely read through all of those later. But for now, I'd love one more voice-to-voice share. Great, Carmen.
Hi. So, what I have been discovering right now is I'm doing a whole lot of relearning. Because I've been in the fitness wellness industry for 15 or so years, right? And from everything that I've learned over that time and everything that I am shifting in my own life and in the way that I approach my clients is that we are told as trainers, coaches, whatever, give them a diet plan, give them a workout plan. And then for so many people, they're so disconnected to themselves at this point that they're looking to be told how they're supposed to eat, how they're supposed to move, how they're supposed to do all these things. So on one hand, I have the clients that are on the other end expecting me to tell them what to do, right? And then I have myself on my end of having so many years of education in educating people. And from what I learned so far is that we really have to know what we need within us and really connect with our bodies, so that we can create lasting wellness in our lives and not start and stop and look for answers outside of ourselves. So I'm in this weird place where I have this deep knowing and belief. It's what I market, it's what I am really putting forth in creating connection with my clients and helping them, encouraging them to listen to themselves and create that connection within themselves. But I feel like I stop myself so many times because I want to teach, I want to educate, I want to give them the answers because that's what they're wanting, and that's what I'm so used to. So it becomes, there's a lot of resistance for me when I'm in these coaching sessions of trying to stop myself and help them find that within them without teaching, but also without having them feel like they're not getting anything from it. Does that make sense? There's a lot
Yeah, it makes so much sense. And I'm so glad you're bringing this forward. And first, I just want to like honor and celebrate you for being willing. You've been doing this for 15 years. Like, it's a big deal to shift. So it's incredible. First, I just want to reflect that I got chills, like visceral chills, when you said that you really believe that individuals know what's best for them and their bodies. Like, I could just, that felt like not only a truth to me, but something that you are so passionate about. And as you were talking, you know, what was coming up for me is that both can live together, meaning your clients can be the experts of themselves, and you can also be the fitness and diet expert that helps guide the way for them. And I think, like, that's where you're trying to, like, you're trying to find that, right? So first, I just want to, like, give full permission that both can exist together. And I think what might be helpful, some things that I think might be helpful. So number one, to integrate this even more into your marketing. So it sounds like already in your marketing is, I, you know, the, this like belief that people know best, but also integrate the other piece in, right? I have this many years experience, you know, understanding diet and exercise and supporting individuals to personalize it for them in ways that work for them. When we work together, we bring your, you know, wisdom of you and your, you know, and your body with my expertise, and we join together to, like, create, right? So if you're not already leaning in on that in your marketing, that's one thing I would do. The second thing is, on your very first session, I would share that again. I would say, I know part of you, for me, I might make a joke, but whatever, like, energy is right for you. I know part of you just is here and you want me to tell you what to do. And what I've learned from doing this for 15 years is that actually doesn't work. I really wish it could, but it generally doesn't work. What's going to be most powerful for you to be able to XYZ, whatever their goals are, is for us to come together and be partners in this. Your wisdom is just as important as my wisdom and expertise together. And ask, like, is that okay with you, right? Yeah. Like, to the client. And then the third piece is in, so then you're pre-qualifying all the way in the marketing as you're setting the container when you're starting to work together. And then I'm a big advocate of, like, whatever goes through my mind in a session, almost everything, I'm going to share it with the client, right? So in those moments where you're like, oh, I want to tell her what to do, but I want to hold that, like, I might be like, you know, I really want to tell you what to do right now. And I'm going to give you my opinion in a few minutes. But first, let me ask you some questions, right? And then you, that will, like, take care of it in your mind, and it will take care of it for the client. They know that they're getting an answer, but you can be back in this creation together. Yeah. All right, I just shared, I just consulted a lot. I'll stop. Tell me what you're hearing that feels important for
you. Yeah, I love, so the first piece, the first marketing piece, yes, I'm doing all of those things now, which I wasn't before. That's, I worked on a lot of that last year. So now my point of view is really coming through in my marketing, which is awesome. And I love that last third piece that you said about just kind of naming it, right? Naming it, that I am wanting to give you these answers and teach, or, you know, like, I do have this perspective, but I do want to ask these questions and so on and so forth. I love that piece. And I think I have been better. The second one, I think I have been getting better at setting that container during, like, the enrollment call or their planning day call or something like that. And I am want to be more conscientious of making sure that I am putting that forward during our enrollment and planning day calls. I do see that, what I am noticing from what you're saying in our conversation right now and what we said earlier, that I think there's a few things. I've gotten comfortable with my own wisdom and expertise, and I have this discomfort that the client is not going to get the answer quick enough, or they're going to leave the coaching call feeling like they didn't get something from it. So there's, like, all this fear around it, I guess, and also the me part of slowing down and pulling back, even though I do think I know the answers. But at the end of the day, they are still my answers. They're not their answers, right? And allowing for more space for curiosity to learning process. But yeah.
Absolutely. And I know it's uncomfortable, but I love that you're in this space because that's when you're growing, right? When it's like, oh, I'm not quite there yet, but I see. So, really
Totally.
nicely done.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's keep on going. So let's look at foundational elements of powerful breakthrough questions. What makes the best breakthrough questions? Couple of things. So, and first of all, this is important, and I want to say this at the outset. There's no formula for amazing and effective questions. I really, really wish there was a formula and I could just give you the formula and that would be it. But masterful questioning is truly an art. There are so many different client situations and scenarios and client moods and client energies and client backgrounds, right? And we want to take all of this into consideration when we go to ask a question. This is back to coaching the what based on the who. So I can't give you an A plus B plus C. That's just really not a thing. But what I can give you are elements to be thinking about, foundational principles to be thinking about. The other piece, before we get to those elements, is just to say, and I know that you know this, but it feels important to share. None of the skills that we learn exist in a vacuum. So the most masterful practitioners are working all of their skills at the same time. So what I mean by that is that you can't ask breakthrough questions if you haven't been doing deep listening, for example, if you haven't been holding energetics, if you haven't been checking your filters, etc. The best questions are when everything, all of the skills are building on each other and working together, which they start to automatically do the more you practice. Okay, first foundational principle for breakthrough questions. Don't ever expect any kind of particular answer or outcome. The moment you expect a client to answer a certain way is the moment you are, in a way, attached to an outcome, and it kills curiosity. It holds you back from being able to really check your filters. When you're expecting any kind of particular answer or outcome from a question, it can also stop you in your tracks if the answer you get from your client isn't what you were expecting, right? It's like you had this whole idea of where it was going to go and you were kind of became attached to it. You were expecting it. And then it's like, what do I do now, right? This is a practice, almost like an energetic practice to keep on coming back to. No attachment to any kind of answer or any kind of response or any outcome. As a side note, this happens a lot in enrollment and sales conversations too. The moment when we're holding a sales conversation or process that we expect the prospect to answer in any kind of way is the moment that we've kind of lost our ability to really hold the container for a productive enrollment conversation where the prospect can make a good aligned decision for themselves about whether or not we want to work together. So instead of expecting any kind of particular answer or outcome, when you go to ask a question, when you're putting a question together. Instead, follow your intuition and your natural curiosity. If you, we said earlier, humans are curious, right? This goes not just for our clients, but it goes for ourselves. If we remain in that place of curiosity, we looked at this in listening skills, right? If we remain in that place of curiosity, then we're not attached to a particular answer. We're just curious and we can ask the better question. So I like to think of it this way, that a good question is rooted, when it comes to this topic, in the following four things. Number one, it's rooted in listening to our clients and being attuned to their needs. Number two, it's rooted in us keeping track of the bigger picture agenda and what the client wants to receive and what their goals are. Number three, in our own intuition and curiosity. And then number four, in what we might, this is where consulting comes into a good question, in what we might know from our own experience. Let me put those in the chat. So if we're listening to our clients deeply, we're attuned to their needs. If we're keeping track of the bigger picture agenda, which is important because or else our questions can the curiosity can meander off track, right? So we want to keep track of the bigger agenda and the goals. If we're also, as we learned in listening to ourselves and our own curiosity as we listen to our clients. And then we do want to use our wisdom, experience, etc. So I'm still looking at Carmen on the screen. You know, for example, Carmen in her expertise might know that certain individuals, when they eat too much sugar, they feel certain ways in their body. That knowing might come into play when a client is talking about their diet, and that they eat a lot of sugar, and right then they also happen to mention XYZ. That knowing might come into play in the question that she asks. In our practicum last week, I don't remember the details, but Carla was talking about two different fears that she had. One had to do, I think, with letting down people, and then the other had to do with being big and visible. I asked her a question, how might those two things relate to each other? Part of that is from my experience and my expertise that I know that sometimes when we're scared of being too big, we're also scared it's going to hurt and offend other people. I didn't say that to her. I didn't consult that, but I asked a question to open up awareness and without being attached to outcomes, see where it wanted to go. As it turned out, her answer kind of was about that, but it also went in a different direction. If I had been attached to her being like, oh my God, yes, of course, this relates to that, right, exactly, then I would have been stopped dead in my tracks. Annalise.
Hey, Joanna, this is incredibly helpful. I'm just wondering whether the fourth one could actually be in some cases a filter.
We want to check our filter for sure. Like, and again, checking our filters doesn't mean we're not using the information from our filters. And this is an important distinction. So we want to check. So back to my example with Carla, my filter was checked. So I knew that it didn't necessarily mean that the two were connected. I checked that filter. It's not like I was believing that was the case for everybody. But I still asked the question knowing that that may not be the case. So I checked the filter, but still used the information so that and that put me as the practitioner in the position of not being surprised by a different answer or not being like, oh, she's just in resistance, blah, blah, you know, whatever it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess, you know, use the information, as you said before, without being attached to the outcome, because if you were attached to the outcome, then that would be a filter.
Exactly. And Marianne's putting it really beautifully in the chat. She says it sounds like a difference of leveraging your filter because you're aware of it versus imposing your filter. I like that. Okay. Any other thoughts on not being attached to a particular answer or outcome before we move on to the next piece? Barbara.
I just wanted to echo what you were saying about enrollment calls. And a lot of times what I've experienced is people have a paradigm of their clients' experiences, and it helps them to, you know, create a container and specific results. And when you say, well, yeah, I get what you're saying about that, but it doesn't mean this for me, it throws them off, and they're no longer able to help you because they've got this structure in their head about how people are in the world, and you don't disagree with the structure, but you don't fit into the narrowness of their box. And so I think that's just really helpful to make sure, like, I just noticed how people expect a certain answer in those enrollment calls. Yes, you can help me. No, you can't. Because, you know, I was like, no, there's nuance here. So I think that, you know, because I've had that more of those experiences than being coached. And I'm like, we're not going to be a fit because you don't get the nuance of me. So I want to have that, you know, I want to hold a container that isn't conditioned to expect a certain response from, like, let people be people.
Yeah.
Individuals.
Absolutely. I'm really glad that you're underscoring that for the enrollment conversations, because you're right, it does come up a lot. And then the practitioner trying to make the sale tries to fit the prospect into a box that is not where they need to be or what's going to serve them. Yeah. Thank you. All right. Let's keep on going. So here's the next foundational principle to keep in mind when you are crafting questions. Remember that your client always has a choice. Remember that your client always has a choice. So they may not have the choice they think they have or they want to have, but there is always a choice. So let me give you, the best way to illustrate this is to give an example. Let's say, well, and even before I go there, let me say this. This principle is really important because sometimes we can join our client in the unspoken belief that they just have no choice in their situation. There's nothing that can be done. There's no solution, etc. And so we want to always keep top of mind that there's always some kind of choice. So for example, let's say you're working with a client and they're sharing about their children and the mess in the house. And they say, my kids are complete messes. It doesn't matter what I do or what I say to them. They just won't clean up. And that's that. and my house is never going to be clean. So this, the client in this situation is coming from a place of not having a choice. They're not coming from a principle of choice. Now, it might be true that no matter what this person says, their kids won't clean up. That may be true. But so then what does this client have choice about? And how can you use questions to open this up for her? Does she have choice in terms of how she reacts to the mess versus how she responds to the mess? Does she have choice in terms of how she feels? What kinds of questions can you ask from a philosophy of choice? So in a situation like this, my kids are such messes, it doesn't matter what I've done, they won't clean up, I can't stand it. This is one of those, when a situation like that happens, it is so tempting to go into consulting mode, right? Like if you're a parenting coach, you may have amazing tips on how to talk to your kids or set up things in the house so that chores get done or whatever it is. There's a moment for that consulting, but see if you can hold off in those moments for a little bit and ask some questions first. When a client brings a situation up like that where they're not coming from a place of choice, the other thing as a practitioner, don't be attached to outcome, right? So the outcome would be like to getting her to a solution on how to get her kids to clean up. There might be a way to get her kids clean up, but that way might not reflect your client's values or how they want to parent, right? Or there just might not be a way. So don't become attached to outcome. Instead, ask questions from a philosophy of choice. So for example, you might want to ask, you might want to say something like, I hear that you've done a lot to get your kids to clean up and they haven't, and you're frustrated. What would you like to receive around this issue? We want to ask this question anyway to be able to set the intention, right? We learned that already. But this question also works at opening up the philosophy of choice, that there is something in here that the client has choice around. The client might answer this question of, you know what, I just want to be seen in my frustration, right? Like what I want to receive here is I just want to vent. Or I just want to know that it's normal to have kids that don't clean up. Or maybe the client wants a solution to the problem. Or maybe she wants a way to move through it where she doesn't resent her children. So even just asking, what is it that you want to receive around this issue, has the potential to create a breakthrough or a revelation, because it will open up choices for the client on how they want to move forward. They'll possibly start to see opportunities. Another question you could ask in this scenario that comes from a principle of choice is, what's the growth opportunity for you here? Or where do you have choice in this situation? You could ask a yes or no question in this case that could open up philosophy of choice, something like, is it true 100% of the time that no matter what you do, your kids won't clean up? So we don't want to kind of get taken away with the, like, there's nothing to do here. There's no choices. I'm stuck. And in order for us to be able to approach our questions with a philosophy of choice, we also have to practice it for ourselves. So let me just ask you a couple questions about this. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you usually at remembering that you have a choice, like in any situation? Do you go to like, oh no, I need to work this much. I have to visit my parents, whatever it is. Some of my places where I sometimes don't have a philosophy of choice. Right. So for you, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you remembering that you have a choice? This is awesome. I'm seeing a lot of high numbers in the chat. Yeah, 2 when triggered. Yeah, right. When we get triggered, it's easy to, then it becomes a little the victim archetype too, because that archetypal energy doesn't feel they have a choice. You know, they don't feel like they have opportunities. I'm with you on that. What's one specific place in your life right now that you could approach with more of a choice philosophy? What's one specific place in your life right now where you could approach with more of a choice philosophy? Rachel, I'm going to get to your question or share in 1 second. So Amy, what you're sharing in the chat is really important and right on cue, because I was about to go there next. So Amy is saying in the chat, I often wonder about the connection of privilege and choice. This is a really, really important point. When a practitioner has certain privileges, whether it's a privilege around gender, a privilege around race, a privilege around age, a privilege around education, a privilege around religion, you know, whatever it is, you may have certain choices available to you that, if your client doesn't have that privilege, they may not have those choices necessarily available to them. So we want it always, like we looked at in listening, we want to always check our filters, and especially when we have a certain privilege. And within that, support a client to see if and where they do have a choice. Rachel.
Thanks, Joanna. I'm hoping I can express my question coherently. I'm still forming the words in my mind, but I am a parenting coach, so your example brought up a question for me, which is, and I love that question around like, what do you want to receive around this issue? What about those times where clients believe there is no possible solution, but you can see that there are possibilities? Like, how do you kind of honor what they're bringing in their experience and also kind of help to offer the support that they might really want, but just believe is impossible?
Yeah, it's such a great question. So we'll get real much deeper into this when we get to resistance archetypes. But for now, what I'll say is oftentimes when a client doesn't see that they have, that there is a, it's not, it's, that's not an experience in a vacuum. It's a patterned response for that individual where they have certain beliefs or fears, or messaging that's seeped inside of them that says like, there's nothing, I can't do anything here. You know, this is just all against me, or like nothing's gonna work. It's just gonna be a bad outcome. I have no power here, et cetera. And so like on the simplest way to say is, so in that situation, part of our job is first, so then the process becomes longer, right? We can't just get to seeing what the choice is. We have to support our client to see their patterning and how they might be applying this patterning to this situation, and then maybe do some work around poking holes in some of that patterning so that things can like open up a little bit for them to even be willing to be in an energetic place of having a choice. That might be a new place for them in certain situations. And so we'll, when we get to resistance archetypes, I'll give techniques for that. But for now, tell me if that lands and resonates.
It does. I'm thinking maybe like 80 to 90% of the time, it's like people, like clients that I've worked with have been really ready and willing to receive or like support around that thing. But there, yeah, I have come across like, yeah, so if I'm pretty new, I have come across a client for whom it was, it did have a bigger, like deeper pattern that really would have needed to be addressed for that to be effective.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. And one other thing, I'll just add, sometimes it's a deeper pattern, and then sometimes it can be a fear about that particular situation. the client might not be thinking this, you know, consciously, but like, if my kids start cleaning the house and the house is clean, then how am I going to exert control, or, you know, like whatever it is, it could also be about a fear of them in the particular situation.
Yeah.
So yeah, great cues. I'm just going to turn a light on. Hold on. Okay. Let's keep on going. Some more principles for us to look at for effective breakthrough questions. Be willing to be lovingly bold. Be willing to be lovingly bold. We've already looked at this as a principle in a way in our creating awareness module. When we looked at reflecting hard truths. The same goes in for questions, right? We may see something or want to ask a question, but know that it can be a little stretchy. So in those cases, you want to be willing to be bold, but to deliver that in a loving way. So here's an example of that in questions. Let's say you have a client who shares that they're working all the time and they're upset that they never have enough time for themselves, for their family, etc. A good enough question that's not lovingly bold is kind of like a standard coaching question in this situation might be, well, what can you do differently? Or what would help you make more time for yourself or your family? Those are good enough questions. You know, they'll get you somewhere for sure. More of a breakthrough or a more of a bold question might be, at what point did you start making work your top priority? Now, if we're going to ask a lovingly bold question, we want to make sure that we've got a solid container with the client, including solid trust. We don't want to ask a lovingly bold question if a client has come into a session already triggered by something else, you know, if they're not grounded and in the place to receive it. We want to make sure our own energetics are in place, right? That we don't have fear or judgment as we ask the question. We want to deliver it with love. In a good coaching, Amy's asking, with this example, I don't see how it's bold, doesn't seem. Amy, can you come voice to voice and share a little bit more? I want to make sure I answer your question.
Yes, it doesn't sound like it's that challenging to me. I can imagine more challenging. Like when I think about the hard truth, they seem a little bit more direct, but that seems like a kind of a general question.
So, right. And so it just depends on the client and the full context. So, but if you have a client who's like, my kids are so important and my time for myself is so important, but I all right to say, when did you start making work a top priority? That can be edgy for that.
Now I get it, because it creates the awareness that they've put they've prioritized their work over their children. That's yes. Edgy. Got yeah. It. Thank you.
Randa, do you want to come up and ask your question too, just so I understand?
Hi. It sounds like you're calling them out on what they're on their crap, really. So the way I put the word judgy, because it just sounds like, to me, it sounds quite pointed. You're basically calling them out. So how do you put that lovingly part in there?
So some of it is in the energy of your voice. Right. So it's less about the words and more about the energetics. So that's the energy in your voice. And like I said, it's the energy in the container. I'm not going to ask a bold question to somebody that I've just met, to a client that doesn't trust me yet, to a client that doesn't know that I think they're amazing and fantastic and, you know, just an incredible and valuable human being. All of those, when those energetics are in place and the client is in the right way place that day to receive the question, it doesn't, or I shouldn't say it never comes off as judgy, but I haven't experienced it. Once or twice I have, and then right, and like human beings are messy, and then you may have to like explain or talk it out, etc. But I wouldn't avoid asking those questions because of it if you know those conditions that I mentioned are there in terms of the okay. container. Is that helpful?
It is. What you just said was the words aren't necessarily as important, but I almost feel like there was one super bold question you had a few sessions ago about creating awareness, and it was like, whoa, in your face. I soften everything, work around everything. So even I feel like that question could be softened, but awareness, but not as bold.
Yeah, you can use, so you can also use the reflecting hard truths. You can combine here, you can use the reflecting hard, if you feel that that's what the client needs, right. You can say, okay, I'm going to ask a question and I might not be getting it right. So you'll let me know if this is totally off course, but I'm curious, when did you start making work your top priority? So you, if for that particular client in that particular moment, you sense they need more of the softening around the edges, you can use, definitely soften, you can use some of those techniques. What I'd say for you, Randa, is play with it, because I don't want you to just default to softening, because sometimes a direct question with love is exactly what a client needs, even if they're going to momentarily get upset with you.
Okay. I think I've just had like two really negative responses that people are just like, oh my, I can't even like, so then it's just a shock factor that I haven't been able to backpedal from, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely as much as you can, you want to see, okay, does the client need it or not? You know, and it's okay, like if you want to soften, but I just will say, in case this is helpful for you or anyone, I do sometimes ask a question where in my mind I'm like, my client might get a little triggered by this question, right? And I have to be okay with that, because a little bit of tension within a loving, solid, trusting container is not necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, every situation is different, so you have to, okay, you know, kind of see what works.
Yeah, no, and I'm recognizing that that's my own response in personal situations as well, is the instant backpedaler and softener and making things better. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Great question. Okay, so speaking of tension, in a good coaching session, oftentimes, in a good coaching session, there is some tension. Either some tension because a client is being confronted, right? Like, and I don't know. I mean, that's why our clients also hire us, right? So it's never in a rude way or a shaming way, or right, like everything we just spoke about. But sometimes there's tension because of that. Sometimes you might feel tension because a client doesn't have the answer right away. Clients shouldn't always have the answer to your questions right away. Sometimes, yes, right? But not every question. Some of your questions should stump your clients for a moment. Some of your questions should challenge your client. Stretch them. Challenge their assumptions. Silence after you ask a question most of the time is not a bad thing at all, even if for you as a practitioner you're like, oh my gosh, what have I done, or they don't know where I was about, like whatever it is, usually silence is like, oh, something important is happening here from the question that I just asked. Okay. Let's talk about language for a little bit. I mean, we've been talking about language a lot, but let's kind of get a little bit more focused now and think about language. Couple of principles here. So number one, most of the time, the best questions are succinct. Most of the time, the best questions are succinct. And I smile as I say this because I am a very wordy person, and it is not uncommon for me to catch myself in the middle of asking a client a question with a lot of words. And then for me to say, wait, hold on a second, let me think of a different way to ask this question and get more succinct with it. Sometimes we need all the words for a question, but especially if you are a more seasoned practitioner, I want to challenge you to start to be more aware and think about how you can make your questions more succinct. And if it's too hard in the middle of a session to do that, take time after a session and write out what was a more succinct way or a more clear and direct way that I could have asked that question. Another thing, and this is something I catch myself doing sometimes as well, In most cases, it is best to ask one question at a time. Don't stack questions. Every now and again, it makes sense to stack two questions, but in general, ask one question at a time. When you ask questions and formulate questions, use your client's terminology, use the language that your client uses. Also with moments of bringing new terminology or new language in. So when a client hears the language that they've used mirrored back in your questions, or even just when you're reflecting, they feel heard and seen, and they feel that you're curious and interested in them and in their world. So, for example, if you've got a client who is married and they refer to their wife as their partner, refer to their wife as their partner, not as their wife. That's just, you know, one kind of example here. If a client uses a particular phrase when describing how they feel, you can create awareness, like you can just reflect it back. Or if you're formulating a question, you want to think about using that phrase in a question. So when I say use clients' terminology and language, I mean two things. One, if they've just used it, like they just used a phrase. Actually, I mean three things. Or if they consistently use it, like my partner versus my wife. Or if what can also fall under this category of client terminology or language is use their filter. So what I mean by that is if you know that a client loves a certain, like at some point they mentioned they love a certain book and you happen to have read that book, or even if you didn't, sometimes like that book could be used as a metaphor in a question. Or if you know that they like a certain celebrity, what would that celebrity do in this situation, right? That's using the client's terminology and language and filter as well. If you know your client is a yoga teacher, you might use a yoga metaphor in a question, right? Like, if you were to do a handstand in this situation and see things upside down, what would you see here? If you know that your client is a parent that has birthed a child and that was a meaningful experience for them, use a birth metaphor when you're talking about their business or whatever. You know, what are you birthing? What's going through the canal right now? It sounds like you're having, I'm forgetting my words, right? It sounds like you're having contraction pains around this blah, 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 blah happening. If you know a client has come from a corporate setting, you might use that language, right? Maybe they're starting a business, but you talk about team, right? Or the culture, you know, like that's a filter for them. So we wanna think about using, in questioning and creating awareness, just in general, we wanna think about clients' language, terminology, filters, and use it. And then also, it can sometimes be really helpful to bring new language in, new phrasing in, new metaphors in. Sometimes it's something that I'm kind of in the background, I'm often asking myself in my mind is, what concept would be helpful for this client? What concept would be helpful for this client? So for example, we might be talking about how the client is making a change and the idea of a butterfly's metamorphosis is a concept that comes up, right? So I'll integrate that into a question or a reflection or catastrophic thinking. I'm so sorry about that. I forgot to turn my ringer off for my phone. Or catastrophic thinking, right? I might bring, a couple months ago, I was working with a client and she was just talking about the worst case scenario about everything. And she was saying worst case scenario. I brought in the terminology of, you know, how might catastrophic, I forget the exact question, but I think it was something like, how might catastrophic thinking be impacting you right now? Right? So bringing a new concept in. All right, let me pause there. Any thoughts or anything that wants to be said around succinct questions, asking one question at a time, using client language or bringing new concepts in? Yeah, metaphors, yes, metaphors can be so, so helpful. Yeah, and AJ, your whole business is like a metaphor. I love it. Anything that wants to be, anything right now more that wants to be said on that? We still have a couple of other pieces I want to cover today. Annalise.
Just understanding really, Joanna, when it's the case to introduce something new rather than perpetrate their filter, when what is a hint that you can give?
That's a really good question. Does anybody have any thoughts on that? I feel like it's mostly intuition. Do you have thoughts on that, Annalise? Like, when are times that you have used new terminology versus clients' terminology?
I think when I know, and this is probably not true with new clients, rather with old clients, so with clients that I know, and if I see that they actually perpetrate certain pattern, then bringing them out of those, you know, like the yoga teacher will, you know, and just bringing them in a new perspective, I think it would be good. Whereas with new clients, I think just giving them the safety of the fact that they are seen, I think I would use it less.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's one way to look at it. So for sure, maybe in the beginning of a relationship, using clients' language even a bit more. Although as the relationship goes on, you still want to do that. But the other thing you said is sometimes it can break pattern, right? Bringing a new idea or concept in can support a client to break a pattern of thinking or a way that they've been thinking. And then again, I go back to that question that I shared before, like, is there a concept here that would be really helpful for the client? And then I'll use the metaphor or language of that concept. Yeah, good. Good question.
Thank you.
Deva.
I was just thinking about that question, Annalise. I had a client who was really stuck in looping thoughts, and I just brought in some of the language around resistance archetypes and, you know, the avoidance and self-sabotage. And she was like, oh my God, that's totally it. And I think bringing in that new language helped to solidify what she was already feeling and sensing, but gave it a structure to be able to kind of have more awareness around it.
Yeah, that's a great example. Thank you. Okay, let's keep on going. Think about word choices. Now, I just want to say I'm giving a lot of if this is starting to feel overwhelming, like, oh my gosh, I have to think about a choice principle and I have to think about language, like all the things, right? Like I said earlier, let this curriculum meet you where you're at. Pick the one or two things that you want to focus on this week. if you're already doing many of these things, pick the next things that are at your edge. As we learn it, you're taking it in now. It's going to be there for you as you need it. So think about your word choices. I'll give you some examples. So one word can sometimes make even if it's a related word, can make a complete difference in the meaning or the landing of a question. So think about these two questions. What would feel empowering for you versus what would feel pleasurable for you? How do you know who your friends are versus how do you know who your trusted friends are? What can you do to move forward? And by the way, one of these questions isn't better than the other. It's just the, right? It's the intention of the question. What can you do to move forward versus what will you do to move forward, right? So for example, with that one, if we're getting into strategizing and action steps and the client I feel is like they're ready, like they're rock solid ready to take action, I'm going to say, what will you do to move forward? If we're getting into strategizing and the client still needs some time to like seep into, okay, I'm going to take action on this now, I'm going to ask, what can you do to move forward? All right, so picking words always goes back to coaching the what based on the who. So just a couple more examples of that. You could be working with two different clients and they could both be sharing about tense situations at work. And for one of those clients, you might ask, how would you like to resolve this? But for another client in that same situation, you might ask, what would be in integrity here, right? If you know that that's one of their values. And for yet another client in that same situation, you might ask, how can you set aligned boundaries for yourself here? So you want to be conscious of that particular client's goals and priorities, maybe most important, their values and their needs when you craft certain questions. We'll talk a bit more about values and needs when we get to visioning too. Think about the tone when you ask a question, your tone of voice, the pitch or the quality of your voice. Think about your pacing, how fast or slow you're asking the question, the volume, how loud or soft, the rhythm, the flow and the melody of the words. One volume or rhythm or pace isn't better than another. It's like what's needed in this moment. As a general rule, with some exceptions, don't ask open-ended questions, not multiple choice, not yes or no. So as a general rule, ask. Oh, and that this is something I'm always working on for myself too, by the way. There are certain moments where a yes or no question is exactly what's needed. It's usually not, but there are certain moments when a yes or no question is exactly what's needed. And usually it's in a moment where a client is ready to make an internal or external decision about something. That's a moment for a yes or no question, because that yes or no that they answer is like a sign to their soul and their psyche and their heart, and, you know, like all that, like it's an affirmation of their yes or no. Most of the time when practitioners ask yes or no questions, when it's not the right moment for it, it's usually a leading question with an agenda. So speaking of which, don't ask leading questions. So here's an example of a leading question. Let's say a client is saying, I wish I wouldn't always miss deadlines. I always miss deadlines at work. I wish I wouldn't miss deadlines. A leading question, which happens to be a yes or no question, is, well, do you think it's because you procrastinate? Is that why you miss your deadlines? An example of a not leading question is, why do you think you miss your deadlines? All right, there's a couple of other foundational principles that we didn't get to, but I think I'm going to save them. You'll see them in the resource sheets, but I'm going to save them for next week so that we can give them the space that they deserve. In the next 4 minutes, I want to give you some homework and then end with cues and takeaways. So, homework, you'll have some resource sheets and worksheets. Also, for those of you that are working with clients, or if you're working with a partner in this program, after your sessions, I think some of you are already doing this. I had shared this with you, but we have like a post session assessment form. What did I do well? What could I have done differently? What are some questions I could have asked differently? I want to invite you, if you feel called, to fill some of those assessments out after sessions. It's an incredible way to improve your coaching simply by, after a session, just answering some of those questions. I want to invite you to slow down. I know you'll feel it's going to be easier to do this with your practice partners if you also have other clients. It's a little harder, but I still want to invite you to do this. Slow down a little bit in your sessions and take a moment to think about a question before you ask it. Like, take a moment to craft the question in your mind. And you can even say this. I say this to clients sometime. Give me a second. I want to think about how I want to ask this question. And then you just kind of give yourself a moment or two. Think about how you want to ask it. If you're working with a partner in this program, focus on questions. So it doesn't mean that you have to ask only questions in your practice session, but in the reflection time afterwards, focus on questions. Discuss what questions were asked, which questions worked, how you can make some questions better. All right, there's some cues in the chat. Brenda's asking, where is that form? It should be in the member center. There should be, I know for sure we have resource sheets for this call. I think there might be a worksheet as well. If they're not in yet, Brenda, they'll be in there by the end of the day. Annalise is asking, are why questions always a no-no? Annalise, I think I know what you mean by that, but I just want to make sure. Can you just explain a little bit more?
Well, just because obviously if we ask why, we sort of like provoke like a justification in the client. So, you know, like when I first went to coaching school many years ago, they were like, yeah, no, you don't ask why questions. But then sometimes I have asked why questions, and I was wondering, was it a complete like red line that I shouldn't have crossed?
Yeah, this often comes up in traditional coaching. A lot of traditional coaching, people are trained never ask why questions. So first, I want to remind everybody what I said on our very first call. Anything that I share is not like the truth with a capital T. You try everything on for yourself and see what's right for you. I was originally trained that way as well. What I've seen over the year and working with clients, at least for myself, is that there are certain times where a why question can get exactly to the heart of what a client needs to see or learn. There are certain moments where a why question can create someone to be a little defensive, right? So we definitely want to be aware of that and the moment, and always coach the what based on the who and ask the question based on the who. But at least for me, I have not seen it to be true that as a general rule, never ask a why question.
Yeah. Thank you, because sometimes I do.
Yeah. And so use that, like the feedback, right? Like, see, did that work? Did it not work? Right? Check it out for yourself.
Thank you, Joanna.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. Before we wrap, please just note for yourself, what are you taking? I know we looked at a lot of like content pieces, but in a bigger way, what are you really taking for yourself today? Or what's a piece that is like really sticking with you from our time together today? Barbara, there's resource sheets in the member center for you to look over, and then just the feedback form. If you're working with clients, I also mentioned just slowing down to think about crafting your questions. Michaelyn, you're taking away to truly be curious and to lead client less to where I think they should go. Nice. Strengthening your choice philosophy. Nice. Being bolder, yes. To not be attached to outcomes, yes. Not to stack questions. Yeah. Taking time to craft a question and name it. Nice. Yeah, good. All right, everybody. I'm gonna hang out and read the chat. Enjoy your week. We'll continue next week. I'm going to turn off the recording, but if anybody needs anything, just let me know.